Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
My nearly 15-year-old daughter broke up with her first boyfriend 5 months ago. They had been talking to each other through Snapchat for 3 months before they officially started to see each other, which lasted 6 months. Although I wasn't overly happy with her dating at such a young age, I felt I had to let her go through the process. They were in touch every day, saw each other weekly for a few hours out of the blue. He finished it with her in May, and she was absolutely heartbroken. I spent the summer trying to build her back up. She started to snap him again a month ago. I assume that means Snapchat him a month ago. And she asked if they could get back together. He said no, that he liked her, but his feelings had changed and he didn't want to go out with anyone at the moment. I know she still has feelings for him and he's a really nice guy. We live in different towns. She's told me he will be she has told me he will be there. I told her nicely it's time to move on and she said she will, but I'm just worried she's still holding out for him and we'll be back to square one when she sees him. Should I stop her going to the party under a false pretense or should I let her go and work it through herself?
It's a bit like at the start of this letter, you know, you weren't that keen on her dating at this age, but you felt you had to let her go through the process. And this is still a process.
Yeah.
And I do think, look, this comes up in different guises nearly every other week, that the urge to protect our kids from difficult feelings is so understandable because you know how painful first love, first heartbreak is. And you want, look, it's 5 months. I've spent the summer building you up. I can hear this mother going, don't go to the party because all that work that we've put in is going to be back to square one. And it might be and it might not be, but it's all part of the process. I don't think stopping her going to this party will end if, for example, she has a fantasy of I'm going to meet up with him and he'll realize how wrong he was and we'll get back together, or even just a desire to rekindle that connection with him. Not going to the party isn't going to get rid of that. You know,
yeah,
it's going to still be there. So you can't protect her heart, but you can help her heal and recover. And that's what you've been doing all summer with her. First heartbreak is really, really hard, you know, so you do have to let her go through it and be there to support. So no matter what happens at this party or what she does or doesn't do or say or doesn't say and comes back to you crying or not, you're just going to be there with the empathy, acceptance, tea and sympathy approach to all of this, and absolutely biting your lip that you don't say, I told you so. I told you not to go to that party. I knew no good would come from this. But actually let her know, because there is something about going to this party that she might be excited and hold in mind it's going to be great. But if he's there with somebody else or holds his boundary around this isn't going to change, she might be upset.
Yeah,
and she might not handle it as well as she thinks she might. So let her know that she can call you or just even send an agreed upon emoji so she doesn't have to pick up the phone, but she can quickly fire you off an emoji and you will go and pick her up. And you will even make it that you're insisting she go home, that she doesn't have to say to her friends, I want to go, that you'll say, I need you home. I'm coming to get you. That you'll take responsibility, give her an out and keep your phone on and be available to her with that. I think, Sean, you could also talk to her in advance about potential scenarios. I know you're going to be fine, but let's imagine you walk in and he's there with another girl. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. What are you going to think? Let's think it through, just to bring her through a number of scenarios ahead of time so that she can go, gosh, I'm not sure I want to go now that I've thought about all those things. Or she's like, I'm fine. I'm ready for it. Either way, you're going to be there to support her.
Yeah. Oh, God, love
it's
her.
Hard. Yeah, it's so hard. She's
because
15.
And in a way, you kind of have to let them, even if she makes a mistake.
Absolutely. Well, mistakes are how
that's
we learn,
what people do,
you know. And first heartbreak, it's hard. Of course, it's hard. But there is learning in it as well. And she's going to learn about herself. And, you know, you can the relationship was good while it was there. It was good. That still counts. Mm. And it's hard to be broken up with. And you can empathize.
Yeah.
And even
yeah.
share an appropriate kind of story yourself, like an appropriate story, I emphasize that word, yourself with her about, you know, what did or didn't help you. And you're not using that as a, so that's what you need to do, but just letting her know you're not alone with this.
Yeah. I'm hoping Joanna could give me some ideas of how to help my son with his anger. He's 7.5. He's a highly competitive child, gets easily frustrated and hates making mistakes, despite reassurance that it's how we learn. We got a trampoline to help him bounce off some anger, and we have made him a poster together and stuck it together on the fridge of what he can do when he's angry, i.e. punch a pillow, stomp his feet, shout in the room. However, as he's gotten older, they don't seem enough for him. We tried jiu-jitsu, but it wasn't for him, and he plays GAA and soccer. He gets angry and says he wants to punch things and has lashed out at his older sisters if they happen to be walking past at the wrong moment. I have noticed that anger is his default emotion for a feeling he doesn't like, e.g. sad, angry, scared, angry, disappointed, angry, frustrated, angry. He doesn't have any issues with this in school or the sports teams. He seems to save it all for us. Are there any other ways of helping him deal with his emotions?
I mean, there are a few, and what you're doing is great. Like what they're doing so far, the trampoline, the poster about, you know, reframing, here's what you can do when you feel like this. All of that is really good. Keep doing it. And you're right, it probably served a bit of a purpose at a certain age, but now he's 7.5. And I've said here before, you know, typically when children are under 7 and developmentally under 7, not just chronologically, they don't self-regulate their emotions. So they're prone to these outbursts and things getting to the too much and too big stage really easily for them. And they co-regulate with us, which basically means if we stay calmer than they are, not totally calm, but calmer, then they have a chance to come and meet us where we're at and we're controlling the heat of the situation. Beyond 7, they tend to show us they can do some of that anyway, if not much of it, for themselves. They can recognize, gosh, that got a bit out of control. And when I got it wrong, I know how to make repair. But it's not like they wake up on their 7th birthday instantly able to do that.
Yeah.
So he's still only 7.5. And it's sounding to me like self-regulation isn't there at the moment. And don't panic about that, because emotionally, he might just still be developing that skill and he has plenty of time to do it. I think you want to talk to him about a wobbly lid. I'd often talk to kids, little hothead kids that might be with me for some of these reasons. I would say, you know, it's a bit like having a lid. And when your lid flips, all the feelings can spill out.
Yeah.
And so what we try to do then is understand that the lid can be a bit wobbly. But if we can get to the lid while it's wobbly, it hasn't flipped yet. And so you're trying to get him to read when he's getting riled up on the way up. So when it's happening rather than when it's happened.
Mm.
Because when it's happened, and you've, if anyone listening, because you've all flipped your lids at some stage, if you need today, we don't make good choices and decisions in a flipped lid state, because the part of our brain that we rely on to make decisions and choices is offline when you flip your lid. It's all about that emotional center of the brain that's firing fight, flight, freeze impulses at us. And that's what's calling it. So he's sounding... You want to talk to him about how to recognize this, but when you talk about how all his feelings, the uncomfortable, icky feelings that none of us do well with, are coming out as anger, it's sounding like the sad, mad kid. You know, I'm sad, but actually I'm going to show you in anger, and I'm scared, but I'm going to show you in anger, because those feelings are about vulnerability. And vulnerability is very difficult thing to express, especially when you don't yet have the emotional fluency to do so. All you know is, I don't feel good. I don't like this feeling, and that's making me angry. And so the anger, it's not that it's invalid, it's just it's clouding these other feelings he doesn't know quite how to express. And I know you've got this lovely chart on the fridge about what to do when he's angry, but it might be no harm to also have something that explains what to do when you're sad and when you're frustrated. And don't sit down, well, you can, and make loads and loads of posters, but there is that book I've mentioned before by Molly Potter, How Are You Feeling, where the whole index is a range of feelings, and you just find the feeling in the index and go to the correlating page. Scared, page 12, and there are 6 things to do when you're scared.
Yeah.
So it's showing him he's made up of lots of feelings, and there are plenty of ways that you can do that. There are books. There's one called Holden Pots. It's about a little pressure pot that flips his lid because he doesn't know how to let out steam on the way. It's by Chandra Ghosh Ippen. That's a tricky one, but it's C-H-A-N-D-R-A. If you put that in, you'll find it.
Yeah.
And Britta Teckentrup has a book, When I See Red. That's actually very nice as well. But in terms of what you can practically do, there is some play that I think can be very helpful around impulse control, about delayed gratification, but just holding it together. So if you've got a sheet of newspaper, a double page of newspaper, and don't hold it in front of your body because you're going to ask him to punch it. So don't put it, don't put it where he's going to punch you. Hold it to the side of your body and pull the page taut, and then say to him, when I say, I don't do ready, steady, go with kids who flip their lids because they're impulsively ready to go ahead of you. So when you say strawberry, And you might go banana strawberry, or you might say banana apple pear plum. Either way, he has to wait and tune into you. Then he punches through the page. So he can punch the page on your cue within your scaffolding. Get him to do that a few times and the double sheet of newspaper ends up as four little bits of paper. Then roll each of those into four paper balls and make a circle with your arms. So now you're a basket and he can do basketball scoring them in. So you're doing that kind of release and then you're bringing it into an engagement play that it's fun to do together and you can increase the challenge, make the circle of your arm smaller, move it side to side, different things like that. That's a good activity. Cotton ball snowball fight is another one. Get a bag of cotton balls, give everybody, the girls as well, because they're getting hit, so they might feel like they want to throw something at him too. But throwing cotton wool isn't going to hurt anyone, but you get that physical release of throwing, and you can bring in a bit of red light, green light. Throw when I say green light, freeze when I say red. So you're doing, it's not getting out of control. In other words, you're structuring it. Or wrap him in toilet paper from his shoulders down to his hips with his hands by his side, and he can bust out when you say bust out.
Okay.
But you're doing that wait, release. And it's helping him to internalize, I don't have to flip my lid all the time. I can hold it in, I can wait, and I can safely release it. With the books and the play, and just having him think that he's not the angry kid in your family. He is a kid who is sometimes angry, but he has lots of feelings inside him.
Yeah.
And I think that could really help.
The emotional regulation and the realization that, oh, I'm actually not angry, I'm sad or I'm scared or whatever. Do they come around the same time or does one tend to arrive before the other?
I mean, it tends to come as they begin to understand that people have lots of feelings, but that doesn't just arrive, Sean. Like that's taught in lots of ways. Not like you sit them down and go, okay, pull up a chair, I'm going to teach you feelings. But in how we reframe, I know you're sad at the moment because this happened and you're very disappointed.
Mm.
But you're not going to hit people. When you feel sad, it's okay to cry. It's okay to come to me. Here's what we'll do instead. And you do this all the time with your kids going, oh, I know you're upset. I know you're scared. I know you're sad. And we give them the translation.
Yeah.
So the behavior that they're doing isn't the problem. The behavior is a sign that there is a problem. And we're translating that and saying, okay, you're throwing because you're angry. You're angry because this happened. And here's something you can do instead because you can't hit people.
Yeah.
And you always put the boundary in, but we're always explaining this is what's happening.
Our second Snapchat related question today. I have a 12-year-old daughter who's in sixth class. She wants Snapchat, as all her friends have it. She said she's feeling excluded as she's left out of conversations in school due to all the talk about Snapchat. My daughter is very trustworthy and responsible, and I feel I could trust her with the messaging, etc. But I'm unhappy with the inappropriate content she could see on Stories and Spotlight. Also, this app is advertised for 13-year-olds. She doesn't have a phone, but has a tablet and plays games with her friends on it. I've just downloaded the app myself to familiarise myself with it and feel she's too young to use it. But at the same time, I don't want her feeling excluded at school. She does have another a child-friendly app she can use to call or message friends, but her friends have moved on from that app now. Any advice would be appreciated. Sounds like they made up their mind.
I'm absolutely going, you just want me to rubber stamp the decision that you've made. You have your answer here. I think, you know, it's easy for us all to sit here and we criticize the platforms, and rightly so. They have a duty of care and they could and should be doing better. But when we know an app is for 13-year-olds and we give it to 12-year-olds, we're part of the problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then you have to look inward and say, okay, we put this in their hand when everything and everyone was saying they're too young for it. You can use the fact that it's for 13-year-olds. What she's doing, everyone else has it. I'm being excluded. I'm missing out. Some of that's true. And it's all dressed up in effective pester power.
Yeah.
And pester power is super effective, particularly at this age. They're masters at it.
Yeah.
But do you know what else is really effective at this age is super clear boundaries. And you saying, I know it's really hard for you. I'm so sorry you're having a hard time. I won't be giving you that app.
Yeah.
You're not 13. That's the minimum age, by the way. It's not saying they green light, give everyone this app at 13.
Yeah.
It's a minimum age. And, you know, I don't really understand that app myself, but what I've done is I'm starting to get to know it. I think that's a really good idea, by the way, to download it and familiarize yourself. And right now, I'm still not comfortable with you having it, but I'm getting to know the app a bit better. And as I understand it more, we can talk about this again. So you're not just saying no and stop asking me. You are explaining it and you're really highlighting that responsible use. Because look, there's campaigns like phone-free primary schools that are so effective because why not?
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's going to become law in the distant future.
Absolutely, it is. And it is a great support to parents in this situation, but it's also a good example of how you need the tipping point of parents in your school or your class to also not have phones, because if the tipping point has them, you're into the pester power like this. I mean, my advice here would be hold on to your boundary, okay? They're all too young for Snapchat by virtue of being 12, and you're only responsible for her. So you can be the big bad parent. You're not cool. You're not like anyone else. Fine. Take that on the chin. Delaying the point of access to smart devices and social media as long as you can is a good idea.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. Now, if you're saying, look, I need to get her ready for this, and she will be getting her phone maybe, you know, towards the end of sixth class, going into first year, whatever it is, if that's the decision, then I think it's a good idea to gradually allow her access to the app on your phone. So she can sit with you for 10 minutes, whatever it is, and use that app in front of you, observed by you, and you gradually build her up to it, rather than I've said no, 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 and all of a sudden here's access to everything in one go.
Yes.
Teaching children how to responsibly use technology and social media is as important as delaying the point of access for as long as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. My 6-year-old son is currently struggling in certain situations and is extremely sensitive in general. He's often unwilling to participate in group situations, but he will happily play such sports at home. Last week, we had a very tough time getting him to school one day. This week, he has said a couple of times he doesn't want to go to school. There's no particular reason that we can ascertain. He socialises well and is getting on well at school in general. He's always a bit sensitive, but he's particularly quick to get upset about small issues at the moment, with no real pattern of what he's getting upset about. When he gets upset or decides not to join in, it's very difficult to calm him down or to convince him otherwise. He's a loving, caring and stable environment, and there'd be no major changes in that environment. This recent sensitivity started several weeks ago, before he started back at school and before even mention of going back to school. We don't want to make too much out of it and are confident he'll come through this soon with support, but we really could do with some guidance how to handle it as we're struggling a bit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mm. And he's only 6, you know, it's such a lot, isn't it? I mean, you're parenting a highly sensitive child. That sounds very clear in this letter here. And the world is often very difficult for sensitive children because they feel things at a too much level. Like you're saying, this started a few weeks ago before even back to school. But what you're describing is anticipatory arousal, which is a fancy way of saying getting yourself worked up ahead of the fact.
Yeah.
You know, so you're anticipating, I will be going back. It will be a change, a new teacher, a new classroom. It will, you know, and that's enough for a sensitive child in particular, or a child prone to anxiety. That's enough to set them off and trigger them. He's also, this is for most kids, only the second full week back at school. So it is early days. So he hasn't had that adjustment period is what I mean by that. I would at all costs keep him going to school every day.
Yeah.
You do not want this to become a school refusal, because that's a whole other battle. But I would also notify the school that he is having a difficult time getting into school. He is seeking to avoid. And this is what you're doing. Many schools, if not all, have good structured policies or practices around here's how we support kids having a difficult time getting in here, because it is always a collaborative approach if a child is refusing school. Now, this kid isn't. He's school reluctant rather than refusing. Yeah. And I'd like to keep it in that and move it forward. So, you know, you have to think, when sensitive kids feel the world much, much deeper, get curious about what he might be holding on to. Because you're saying, look, there's nothing after happening. Everything is stable. He's a very nice life, all of that. It could be something that wouldn't even register with most of us that is bothering him.
Yes. But does he even know what, you know,
and he might not know. And
yeah.
He might not. And he might know, I have an uh-oh feeling. I don't feel comfortable, but there isn't a thing that I can pin it on. And you know, like anyone listening who's ever experienced anxiety, sometimes you end up being anxious about the fact that you're anxious and you don't know what you're anxious about. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger because there isn't a thing. If there's a thing, it's what we call context specific anxiety. You know, I'm anxious about this event, this thing.
Yeah.
And if I sort that out, this feeling will go. But if you're just feeling things at a too much level and you're not able to process it, you're just a bit emotionally overwhelmed. And so then I am probably going to say, I don't want to go to school. I'd rather stay at home. It feels nice and safe here.
Mm.
I want my world this small. But keep him there. If this was to continue, though, as a pattern, and you're describing a child that is sensitive in general, some proactive play therapy could be very helpful for him.
Yeah.
Because it's going to give him a way to non-verbally express something. So he mightn't have a story,
yeah,
but through
yeah.
very specific, informed interpretation of play, which is children's universal language, it might support him in working something through. And it might never be that you get it tied up in a bowl. That was the thing bothering him. But he comes out of that process less bothered, which is the ultimate goal. So hold in mind that some play therapy, without waiting for a specific thing, it can be very helpful for kids who are prone to feeling the world like this and just being sensitive. It can be a real gift.
Yeah. Just going back to the 15-year-old who's at our first breakup, someone's written in to say, me and my current girlfriend dated for 3 years, aged 14 to 17. We were too young to know how much we loved each other. Fast forward 6 years, we met one night and now we're 10 years in a lovely committed relationship, one house and one beautiful daughter together now. We just needed time to grow up and realise the feelings we had for each other as kids. Just to say, there's still hope for that 16-year-old girl to get her, get your man back. I wouldn't say that to her.
I wouldn't present it like that.
No,
and those years apart were just as important as the years together for that 10 years and the house and the baby and everything. But that's lovely.
Indeed, yeah. Joanna, thanks a million.
Thank you.
As ever.
Moncrief on News Talk.